I am Planta on the line. This is thecommentary.ca. Don Davies joins me now. He is the NDP Member of Parliament for Vancouver Kingsway. He was first elected to the House of Commons in 2008, and he is the party's critic for public safety and multiculturalism. He's just back from observing the elections in the Philippines, something that's been discussed on this program previously. We'll ask him about what's going on in Ottawa as well. But also what he saw in the Philippines. He is a lawyer, and actually he lives on the same street I do. You can reach him via his website at dondavies.ndp.ca. Please welcome to the Planta Online program, Don Davies. Good morning, Mr. Davies.
Joe, it's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks for joining us. I read about your going to the Philippines and the Georgia Strait. Why did you go?
Well, I guess my for a number of reasons. In my riding, I have a very large Filipino community. Approximately 11% of Vancouver Kingsway is Filipino, which translates to about 15,000 people. So I've been working closely with the Filipino community socially and culturally and politically for the last 3 or 4 years. Then last November, of course, most of your listeners will know that there were 57 people who were massacred in Mindanao, in the Philippines, as they were attempting to file their candidate papers. And there were approximately 30 journalists, a number of lawyers, and the candidate's wife, who were all brutally massacred. And at that time, I thought that there was a great trauma experienced, not only in the Philippines, but also in the Philippine community here in Canada. And so I set about trying to get the Government of Canada to send a parliamentary delegation to the Philippines as observers to deliver some international solidarity and assistance to show that the Philippine government, the Philippine people, that Canada cared and would do our part to help restore a sense of calm and peacefulness to the elections.
But the Foreign Affairs Ministry did not send an official delegation. Is that correct?
That's correct. It was a long process that I must say, frankly, disappointed me. I did a lot of work from November to March, trying to remove every single impediment that the Canadian government put up. So first, the Canadian government said that they did not have an invitation from the Philippine government to send observers, and I contacted the Philippine ambassador to Canada and obtained information that indeed the president of the Philippines herself, Gloria Arroyo, had issued a public invitation to all of the advanced democracies to come observe the election. I also obtained resolutions from COMELEC, which is the Philippine Commission for Elections, that specifically provided for foreign observers to come attend as representatives of government or of private organizations. And I sent all of that information to the minister. The minister then said that he was worried about sending enough MPs so that we could maintain the balance in the House of Commons, and I arranged to have two NDP members, two Liberal members, and a Conservative member go, so that would assuage that concern, so that the government didn't have to worry that there would be a vote, you know, while we were gone. And that didn't seem to mollify them either. And at the last minute, with about 3 days to go prior to me leaving for the election, the government just simply flatly turned it down.
So where did you go?
Well, I landed in Manila, and I had my own COMELEC credentials. There was another group called the People's International Observer Mission, the PIOM. And they also were starting in Philippines, and they were a group that consisted of church members, NGOs, and just concerned citizens who put together an election observing team that went all over the country. So we landed in Manila, and we had an orientation together, and then I left the next day for a place called Bontoc, which is in Mountain Province. So I stopped in Baguio City for a day and interviewed people there, and then I proceeded north of Baguio City to Bontoc, where I was present on election, the day before the election, and the day after.
What do you think Canadians can learn from this experience? I mean, you obviously, you go there, you're looking for, I guess, irregularities in the polls and the sort, but I'm sure there's something that we can learn, whether it's electronic voting.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing about this is that I felt was important is not to go to Philippines with any sense of democratic moral superiority. I wasn't there to criticize. I wasn't there to condemn. I was there to observe and to try to be a presence that would be, as I said before, calming or some assistance to people as they felt more secure in voting. But in terms of specific things that I observed, I think what Canada could learn, first of all, is there's very, very active campaigning. There are, you know, during an election, Philippines, it appeared to me, it really takes over the country during the period, the 45-day period preceding Election Day. They also had very, very high turnout. The official turnout is about 75%, and that's underrepresenting the number of people who voted because they had difficulty with their election machines and with a process that they called clustering. They took precincts that had individual polling stations before, and they grouped them into larger polling stations. So where there may have been six polling stations before, they grouped into one. And that created very long lineups and ended up keeping people unable to vote. So 75% is actually low. There were probably more like 80 to 85% of the population turned out to vote. And I think that's something that Canada could really learn, which is how important the franchise is and how valuable in a democracy and how important it is for people to cast a ballot.
You mentioned some of the other groups that were there, these other foreign observers. I saw one story where some of them claimed that they were harassed while they were observing. That's not the case with you, or was it?
No, I wasn't harassed at all.
You weren't photographed or anything like that?
No. I was treated with a lot of respect. And now, I was a little different than the PIOM observers because as part of my attempts to get a Canadian parliamentary delegation, I had applied for COMELEC status and was working to get my fellow MPs that status. The PIOM observers did not have official COMELEC status. So I had the ability, the authority to go into the polls to, I could photograph in the polling station, which I did. I could talk to any official, any candidate, any voter at all times. So I really had wide scope to observe every single aspect of the election. The PIOM people did not have that wide of authority. Now, in terms of harassing, we had PIOM people from Canada who went down to Mindanao, the site of the massacre, and there were three people who were present at a poll where a gunfight broke out, and it turned out that they were in the middle of an automatic weapon firefight for 30 minutes. There were also people in Abra who also experienced physical violence in the polls. So there was a different experience by different people depending where we were in the country.
Are you confident that the voting was conducted fairly? Mr. Strada, the number two candidate, as well as some of the other lower-ranked candidates, are alleging otherwise.
You know, that's an excellent question, Joe, because it's tough to give a clear answer to. There, I call what I saw a democracy, like demicracy,
yeah.
Not a democracy, because there were aspects of democracy there that, and there were aspects that we would find wanting. So, for instance, there were lots of candidates. There were multiple parties. There were people, you know, people were able to vote. There was active campaigning. So in that sense, I think we have to say that there was certainly a free election. But what I also saw was I saw massive vote buying. I was present inside a room where I saw three women stuffing envelopes with 300 pesos. And there were thousands of envelopes. And I saw that personally with my own eyes. And I've heard that story confirmed by many of the election observers. So there's massive vote buying. There is open campaigning around the polls and inside the polls. There is not secret balloting, so people sit down at a desk and they mark their ballot in full view of everybody else. And when they're inserting their ballot into the machine, the ballot is legal-sized paper, 14 inches long. The covering that's given to them is letter-sized, 8 inches. So when they're feeding their ballot into the machine, there's election staff who are watching as the ballot exposed goes into the machine so people can see who they're voting for. So in that sense, I think there are serious deficiencies in terms of the voting process, such that I couldn't honestly say that it would pass the test of being a completely fair election.
Now, these machines that they use, and as you mentioned, the ballot is legal size. That's like how we vote municipally here in Vancouver, right?
In a sense, these are the Philippines used optical reading machines, and this is the first time in history. And the reason they did is because the manual voting last time and the manual counting process resulted in huge irregularities where ballot boxes went missing. It took up to 7 days to count the ballots. They would move the ballots from the ballot room to a different center, and then there would be accusations that ballot box had been switched, they had been stuffed, etc. So what they tried to do this time was use a machine that would count the ballots very quickly. Now, they did that, but there were all sorts of problems caused by that. The machines broke down. I was in one of the classrooms that I was observing. The machine was down for an hour and a half. There's grave suspicions that the memory cards that are inserted in the voting machines may have come pre-programmed. So the machines there, I'm not sure. They did have the virtue of resulting in a quick count, but I'm not sure that they gave the Filipino people a lot of confidence that the voting results were any more accurate.
Let's touch on some other things here, Don. You're on a break right now from Ottawa, right?
Well, that's what they call it, but not really. The Parliament's not sitting, is recessed for a week, so I'm here in my constituency office doing work here.
Yeah. Well, when you talk to your constituents, whether they call your office or they write you or you see them on the street, what are they generally concerned about in terms of the state of government in Canada?
Well, you know, it varies sort of month to month, Joe. I mean, it depends on, I get a lot of reaction depending on what issues are in the news. The last couple of months, I've gotten a lot of correspondence and phone calls on the HST. That has taken up a lot of our correspondence. Some of the legislation that's in the House of Commons, I have received a lot of mail. So there was a euthanasia bill. It was a private member's bill by a Bloc Québécois MP that sought to amend the criminal code to make it not illegal for a doctor to assist someone who wanted to end their life. I got a lot of mail on that. And I generally get a lot of mail on issues that relate to the economy. You know, people that are concerned about, and that can range from people's inability to buy houses or to find accommodation to wages, to issues that basically relate to folks' attempts to survive.
So when we watch Power and Politics or Power Play on the news, and they're talking about Marcy McDonald's book or Schreiber Mulrooney or Raheem Jaffer, do those things come up as well in Kingsway?
They do, not so much. I can't say that I've gotten a lot of mail on those things. I mean, those kind of scandals, I think, operate on a national scale, and I think the media tends to be very interested in them. And I think it does permeate into the population, but I can't say that I've gotten a lot of communications on those issues.
You mentioned the HST campaign. You're quite active in that, right, in your party as well?
Yes. We were the only party that voted against it in Parliament.
Yes, that's correct. Do you find that as we get, I guess, what is this petition that's going through here? We're about a month or so, or a month, just a month and change before it's due. And I read somewhere today that that they've gotten into 75 out of the 85 ridings. They've met their threshold. Is that the same here in Kingsway?
Yes.
I mean, in the ridings that are in Kingsway provincially?
Yes. Yeah, I did some canvassing with Mabel Elmore in Kensington,
yeah.
Which is one of the provincial ridings almost totally in my riding federally. I've been working with Adrian Dix, who has been very active in getting signatures. Mount Pleasant, Jenny Kwan has a little bit of our riding, and I think all three of those provincial ridings have gotten far more signatures than they need.
And if we wanted to sign it, could we go to your office, say, and sign it?
Actually, you can't. There's very, very strict rules under the provincial legislation in terms of how you can sign a petition, and we cannot use any kind of government resources whatsoever as part of the petition process. It really is intended to be a citizen-driven process. But I think there's a website. I would encourage all of your readers or listeners to go, you know, to Google HST and the petition, and I'm sure they'll find the information they need on the web.
And your gut feeling is that this will pass? That they'll get the vendors in, they'll get the signatures that they need?
I think it will. Yeah. Yeah, I think it will. And, you know, in Vancouver Kingsway, Joe, one of the big issues, you know, that preceded my election was David Emerson crossing the floor. And the reason I think that was so palpable to people was because he claimed that he wouldn't. And so there was a feeling of deception. You know, on election night, he said he'd be Stephen Harper's worst nightmare. 2 weeks later, he's in his cabinet. What I think really gets people politically is being deceived, you know, and that's what I think is really fueling the HST drive, is that during the May election, the May provincial election last year, when the Liberals were asked specifically if they were going to bring in the HST, they said no. They said they clearly represented they wouldn't do it. And then we find out now that 3 days after the election, they were in communications with the federal government to do exactly that. And that's what I think has really enraged people. Because in a democracy, and this ties in with the Philippines election maybe back at the beginning, in a democracy, for people to cast a meaningful vote, they have to have honest depictions of policy from the people who are seeking their office. And if those people in office are not telling the truth to the people, then how can people cast an informed ballot? You don't even know what you're voting for if people are deceiving you about the policies they're going to bring in. We recognize that things change. Sometimes positions change. Sometimes circumstances change. That's different. But when there's a clear attempt to deceive the voting public, then they will react. And that's what I think we're seeing in British Columbia.
Now, I'm sure you and your party and your leader, Mr. Layton, have been watching the goings-on in England with the coalition government there. Is that something you're thinking about, say, down the line, if there's an election anytime soon, about perhaps using your seats, whatever seats the NDP gets in the next election, to get somewhere in terms of supporting a government that thus getting the legislation? Or are you doing that now?
No, we're not doing that now, but I'm sure that after the next election, our party, the New Democrats, will be very keen to work with any other like-minded party to bring in a government that will actually represent the majority of Canadians. As you know, the NDP tried to do that after the last election in trying to form a coalition with the Liberals after Stephen Harper's attempts to do things like eliminate public financing of elections and his attack on the civil service and eliminating pay equity for women. We tried to do that with the Bloc Québécois' agreement not to bring down a coalition between Liberals and NDP. Of course, the Conservatives misrepresented that, and they said that it was a coalition with the separatists. It was not. The agreement was purely between the Liberals and the New Democrats, and the Bloc simply agreed not to vote non-confidence for 2 years. So we have a record, the New Democrats, of saying that, yes, we will do like they did in Britain, which is combine with other progressive parties to pursue policies that represent the majority of Canadians and bring good, stable government to this country. And depending on the results of next election, I'm sure we'd be prepared to look at that again.
What about something wholesale like Mr. Clegg is doing in terms of having a referendum on a different voting system, perhaps?
I suppose everything's open, Joe. Proportional representation has been a part of my party's policy for some time. When you enter into coalition talks, I guess everything's on the table. and you know, it depends on what the parties can agree to. I know that that was a very major platform of Nick Clegg and the Liberal Democrats in the UK. They campaigned on it, and that was a price that he extracted from Prime Minister Cameron in Britain in order to have the Liberal Democrats' support. I think the Canadian political situation might be, it'll be different than that, and there'll be other issues that will be the subject of debate, but certainly that's something that could be discussed.
Don, it's been good to talk, and I hope we'll talk again.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity, Joe.
You're welcome. The website for more is dondavies.ndp.ca. Don Davies, the NDP Member of Parliament for Vancouver Kingsway. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Plata.